Richard Kingswell with you. This is 2019. And I'm pleased to say, well, there's a stack of albums coming out this month and another album to keep an eye out for. It's a third album for Holy Holy. And Oscar and Tim from Holy Holy, welcome back to Triple J.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
I've got to say this, and I'm not just saying this because you're standing in front of me and you've got a new album recorded, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this is probably the best album you've done. Of the three so far, this one is feeling very good to me.
Well, it's a bit of a nervous one for me personally because I don't know about Tim. We made this all together ourselves from sort of start to finish. So produced it ourselves. I mixed it. And so, yeah, it's scary.
But because it all, you know, if the blame is going to be apportioned anywhere, it can't be on the producer. It's on you guys, right?
Yeah, the accountability rests with us. Yeah.
The decision to produce this record yourselves is an interesting one because, Oscar, you've done so much production work with so many people over the last few years especially. Was this third record unanimous? You guys looking at each other just going, we know enough about this. We know enough about the band. We've got to do it ourselves.
I feel like there was a couple of different things at play. Like one thing was we were really excited by the prospect that any time Oscar and I were together in any room, you know, in any state, we could be making the record. We didn't have to kind of, you know, go to some fancy studio and get other people around. Like we could be creating wherever we were. So having a bit more freedom to be able to make the record like throughout the year or so that we were working on it was one thing.
So the previous two records from Holy Holy, did you basically do the old-fashioned set up in a studio, like book studio space, go in there, record? Mm. Did you do it that way?
Not really, no. The first one was we didn't have a manager or a label or even a band name when we did the first one. It was just, we would just kind of gather in this studio in Brisbane and it was Matt Redlick who produced it and he owned the studio and he was a really good friend of mine and we would often spend long evenings there. That record was recorded over a really long period of time. And then, you know, we finally kind of cobbled it together. The second one was a bit more focused because by then we had a bit of a team around us and we did do it in a couple of big blocks at Head Gap in Melbourne.
Right, okay. Yep. So this one basically was recorded in bits and pieces because you guys don't even live in the same state. You're in Tasmania, right. Tim. Where are you, Oscar?
I'm in Melbourne, so I still live in Melbourne. So yeah, no, that's right. We did some of it in the, you know, a nice studio, Head Gap mainly, in Melbourne, but then, yeah, sometimes it was, I think this was a part of it. We wanted to, at some points on the record, you know, we want the live drums and the big sound, but also sometimes we wanted a collage sound and more atmosphere and using effects and snippets of audio in a way that's new for us. And that involved, you know, even this sort of some of this bedroom style production even at times, you know, and I just had my backpack with my laptop and a little interface and we'd go to, you know, somewhere in Launceston where Tim was at the time, for example, and work there. And it was sort of, I feel like we kind of got this cool kind of way of working that covered a few bases that was quite different for us. And
It feel exciting?
Oh, yeah, it does. It does feel exciting. It's fun.
Did it feel fresh and new? Did it feel like a new approach?
It did, yeah. I mean, sometimes we would, I mean, when we sort of started making the record, we almost slid into it, I suppose. We started making a couple of songs and demos and putting together things without even thinking that it would be the record. Even in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, eventually we'll get a producer and we'll go and do it kind of properly. But then it sort of, That didn't happen. We didn't need to, I don't think, in the end.
No.
If that makes sense.
No, I can't see too many holes in this. I mean, and there's nothing that sort of sticks out to me. I've been living with it for, you know, a few days now and it feels pretty rock solid. Listen, let's just play another little grab of a song which we've got to know and love from the record so far. So that's one of the singles so far from the Holy Holy record. Tim and Oscar with us on 2019 this evening on Triple J. We're going to get to two new tracks from the record in full. With Paint, you guys were steering a little bit, you know, away from the straight guitar sound that you did on your debut record. You've taken it maybe one or two steps even further on this one, haven't you?
I think that's fair to say. partially because I spent so much more time on the computer than on the guitar, but also it was a part of a goal that we kind of set for ourselves sort of early on,
yeah.
I suppose, wasn't it?
We had a couple of guiding principles that we thought might help us to write the songs that we kind of wanted to write with the project. And one of them was that we sort of had a rule that we wouldn't write songs on guitar. So we were happy to have guitar on the record as much as it made sense, but we wanted to be composing the melodies and composing the like the progressions in other ways.
Because the guitar was feeling a little bit uninspiring?
Well, yeah, we'd done two albums and an EP where the guitar was the star every song I had ever written was on guitar, and so it was just a way to try and find something new. And we also felt maybe that by writing on keyboards, the progressions and melodies would really have to stand up for themselves rather than just sounding cool because, you know, I mean, Oscar's such a talented guitarist that he can make lots of things sound really beautiful with the way that he plays them. So it kind of meant we had to dig a bit deeper to write.
Okay.
Yeah, and also just it definitely felt like a new palette of sounds and new possibilities. And one thing that I did, like looking back on the record now, another big feature of it is we used vocal loops and vocal banks and little like captured motifs again and again. And so it was because I couldn't play guitar anymore in it. And so I found myself kind of using my voice, and the voice in this record at times acts a bit like a synth or a string section or something like that. And
just adds to the melody power behind each song. Mm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But how did you feel, Oscar? Because, you know, as Tim just said, you're a good guitar player. not sort of relying on the guitar this time around. Were you totally at ease with that?
It wasn't always comfortable, I suppose, but we did pick up a guitar and you know, just, you know, play together and maybe recorded it on an iPhone, and then we would just listen back to it and think, oh, it just sounds so almost standard for us, you know, we just go into those same places and same progressions. And so sometimes as Tim said, we did have to dig deeper. And sometimes we did writing sessions where we'd get to, you know, halfway through the afternoon and just be going, oh my God, what are we doing, you know? Yeah. But some of those songs actually turned out pretty well, the ones where we were going through the kind of woods, you know, trying to find the way. But I think the main thing was that it was a new, we were having to come up with sounds that for us are new. And that was the kind of goal for me, at least, and it was exciting. Yeah.
Well, let's see whether for your fans the goal has been met.
Yes,
because I can hear people going, get to some of the new music. The subject matter on that song, Tim, do you want to talk a little bit about what inspired the writing of that track?
Like a lot of people, that, you know, there's a few people in my life who live with depression, and like a lot of people, there's a few people in my lifetime who have lost the battle with depression and committed suicide, and so it's sort of on my mind a bit writing this song. And so it's, the song is kind of about the way that depression can make you feel alone, when really there's a lot of people out there who care so much about you and who who love you oftentimes.
Hmm.
And so in a way, I guess like the core message of the song, and it's partly like maybe a bit of a commitment that I want to make myself, is that, you know, if I sense that somebody's struggling or suffering, that, you know, it's really worth reaching out and, you know, getting around them and, you know, letting them know that how much they mean to you.
Yeah, the lyrics in it are quite a reassurance. You know, there's a reassuring mood to it. You know, you are important. I am here. You've got my support. It's often the case with people that you can't sometimes read it, though.
Absolutely right, yeah.
I mean, that's the scary one, isn't it? When
absolutely.
You can see when someone's down sometimes, but sometimes you can't.
Yeah, and so that's why there's the entirely what the sort of sentiment of the title. Like maybe you know, but you're loved by everyone. Or maybe you don't and you feel like you're alone, because sometimes it is like that.
Yeah. Was it a hard song to write, given that you wanted to take something as big as that?
In the studio, I don't really think about the meta of anything other, you know, like how people are going to take it or what it's going to sound like when it's played and so on. Like, I'm right down in the melodies and trying to find, you know, ways to express ideas. And oftentimes also, the way we wrote this record, it was often really long, improvised recording sessions that would be, you know, like maybe 20 minutes long, and then I would go back to Launceston and Oscar would go to Melbourne, and he would sort of mine through all those different parts and find the parts that kind of worked. So the collaborative way that we write, I write the lyrics, but Oscar is often the one who's finding the moments that work.
Yeah.
And I really sort of need that.
But you also show him the lyrics too, don't you?
Well, showing them in the way that we sort of sing them. And then, yeah, oftentimes we'll kind of get to parts that do and don't work, and you know, Oscar will give feedback on
it. Yeah. It's an interesting chemistry between you two, because it's around 2013 you got this project going. Can you remember the first, like the moment where you two are working side by side and all of a sudden the penny drops that you've got something going between the two of you? Can you remember that moment?
Well, we met in Thailand in like 2002 or something.
God.
And I remember playing guitar with Oscar then, and just it always felt great. And we also just enjoyed hanging out and, you know, being friends. So when we got together and started working on Holy Holy, it wasn't like, oh, like it was kind of like just hanging out with a friend again.
You had 10 years of history.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
We always had a good chemistry in that sense. And in fact, when the band sort of started becoming a thing, with a name, and you know, around the time maybe we released Impossible Like You, I suppose, and started playing more shows, and it's all of a sudden it was like, oh God, this is a thing now. That was almost the scariest moment, because I was like, well, is this going to stop it from being just a thing I do with my mate, you know,
yeah.
And into something where I have to, where it's real, where there's pressure, so to speak. I'm glad.
You're okay.
Yeah, definitely.
5-6 years on, yeah. The pressure, the business side of things.
It's all great. And this album, I feel like, is a real, I feel great about it, because we've kind of gone on such a journey, and to do this together in such a wholesome way, I think is a great feeling.
Yeah, weren't too many arguments along the way, because the producer can be the deflecting point, but you don't have a producer this time around. It's you two. Is there any sort of standoffs?
I think we did pretty well. I think often, this is a criticism of myself, by myself, is that when I'm working with another producer, I'll be more inclined to argue, because I'm less in control of the process. There's another person. And so, and I'm not saying I have to be in control of the entire process. I'm just saying that when it is just Tim and me bouncing off each other, we can actually find a common ground quite easily, you know? If that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, once again, as I said to you just a moment ago, it feels strange that it's taken this long for you guys to realise that self-producing is the way forward. And as I said, this record is fantastic. I think a lot of people are going to be really excited to hear the rest of the album. Oscar and Tim from Holy Holy have been with us. The album, I know that the lyric comes from one of the songs, the title of the album, My Own Pool of Light is the title of the record. Did it just sort of stand out amongst all of Tim's lyrics as a title for this record?
Well, titling record is actually seems like almost the hardest bit in a way, in a weird way. It's like finding a way to kind of, I guess, like an umbrella that sort of it all hangs below. But yeah, so obviously Tim is the lyricist, but My Own Pool of Light is a lyric in one of the songs. And we were sort of touring around with it with a few different titles, and for some reason that title, those words, that phrase jumped out at me. I suppose for me it means a lot of different things, but one of the things it means for me is that it, and a lot of the lyrics on the record, not all of them, but a lot of lyrics are about our role in society with one another as individuals, and the idea of my own pool of light being the light that I shine upon myself, whether through social media or my own sort of online persona, or even just the way I need to be kind of sort of self-assured out in the world and have a pool of light around me, sort of, so to speak, which that's a meaning I take from it. I'm not sure that even if that's what Tim meant by that lyric in that song.
But yeah, it's almost like an aura or something, what you give off.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
To the people around you and the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Is that what inspired that lyric?
The lyric actually was taken from a moment. Like, I often write the songs a bit like plays, and they have little scenes and characters and things are happening within the songs. And in that scene, it's like a couple lying in bed and one person's on their phone and one person's not, and one person's bathed in their own pool of light. So it's kind of about, and it's because I think the line before is living other people's lives bathed in my own pool of light. Mm. And so it's kind of like not present.
Yeah.
Was kind of where what it meant in the context of the song. But
then, and that's interesting because a bed is a very intimate place. So if one is on the phone and one isn't, it's like a divide, isn't it?
There's another line in another song that we wrote, which was something like, the loneliest place is beside you, kind of thing sometimes. So that there can be that kind of experience. But also I kind of feel like my own pool of light is about how all of us live these lives that are full of like our own dramas and tragedies. And so each person's life is like, you know, like a novel or a film. And then we all sort of go about our lives together, and it's so each of us in our own pool of light.
Kind of thing. Fantastic. Okay. Well, the significance of the title, it feels like a good, healthy, strong title as well. Got a lot of different layers to it. Mm. Let's play one more track. It's called Starting Line. Before we hear it, did you guys, and it's a little bit of a cliche question for any band that plays guitars and then sort of, you know, picks up a few more keyboards along the way, but there are elements on this record that remind me strongly of Radiohead. And I haven't been listening to your previous two albums thinking of Radiohead as much as I have been with this record. Mm. Not all the way through, but at certain moments. And I think people will kind of pick up on that when they hear this song. Mm. But was Radiohead a touchstone?
We love Radiohead. So, but for us, oftentimes it's kind of, to be honest, oftentimes when we're writing a song, we're like, okay, we don't want it to sound too much like Radiohead, you know. That's kind of because they're so good at that, and we don't want to sort of be replicating what they do. But by the same token, you know, I guess with this record, it was wanting to have like these drums that were full of momentum, and you know, like a freer vocal approach that I haven't really done before, where it was less about getting perfect notes and perfect, like, you know, beautiful sounding vocals. It was a more raspy, kind of wild vocal approach. And some of those things, you know, are also things that Radiohead do.
Yeah, and I suppose, and as you were forming that sentence, I could feel the R word coming. I could feel, and I think you are right about that song, actually. But definitely it wasn't a goal per se, but it is hard, you know, if you're doing the thing where you play with guitars and then you use less guitars, it's hard to then not, you know, have that sort of comparison creep in some way. Mm. And I love Radiohead, probably my favourite band.
You're not the only band to have found Radiohead inspiring. It's a bit like, it's a bit, and tell me, was the English language much of an inspiration?
Yes.
I tell you, there were two artists, with this song in particular, there were two artists that it was actually Justin Timberlake and Solange on that we were like,
wow.
We wanted to try, you know, the beginning of the song where it's really sort of gentle and there's that, the melody, that was kind of like, because I had been listening heaps to that Solange album, and then it was Cry Me a River.
He was getting inspired by JT.
But, well, there you go. But, you know, sometimes it's good to put those kind of inspirations because we're incapable of making it sound anything like that, so it doesn't end up sounding like
I should have worked harder, shouldn't I? I would have really bowled you over. I went, now tell me about Justin Timberlake on this track. I did not pick up on it, but I can hear what you mean, Tim.
Could change, we couldn't make it, we couldn't leave it tight. It was arranged, I would be leaving back when we could decide. It was just the start of the weekend, I called to see and you answered me on the drive. It could never hurt, we believed it, I still believe it, just learned the other side. But then you said something and I said something and we watched the pyres burn. And just weights to carry, cages without birds. It was never hard to forgive you, hard to admit to, hard just to let it go. We were just the same, we could be so strong and so weak, just strangers who fell in love. We broke the talk, we making love, and we could be back in our heart. Scene after scene, I followed you, break from the grave to the old school yard. We came to harm, better living while the lights were leaving, but I couldn't make it from the start. It was always beating and always believing that I couldn't change in time. But then you said something and I said something, the words mean nothing at all. And the things we said just weights to carry, cages without birds. It was never hard to forgive you, hard to admit to, hard just to let it go. We were just the same, we could be so strong and so weak, two strangers who fell in love.
The Sounds of 2019 with Richard Kingsmill.